And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standick Grimaldi Podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standick. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It's Thursday evening here in the DMV. Hope everyone is doing well. It has been clearly a busy week between the league meetings and pro days. So I thought I was going to have this mega podcast episode, but ultimately I broke this up into two parts, what I'm calling Commanders in Action. Part one went up a little bit ago with a focus on Jaden Daniels' pro day and what the Wizards caps staying in D.C. means for a Commanders stadium. Here, we're going into part two. Drake May had a pro day today. We'll discuss that. The Commanders added a new player today at a position they really have not targeted at all so far in free agency, and our guest, Jory Epstein, senior writer for Yahoo Sports. She's covered Dan Quinn and the Cowboys for several years. She's also was at the league meetings and very involved in talking to all kinds of teams about all kinds of topics, including the various new rules. She's also, like me, paying attention to these pro days, and we discussed the quarterback situation, but also just like more about, like, what do we make of a lot of the rumor mill involving Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, and more. So a really fun episode to dive into. A lot to get to. I'm going to keep you guys busy here. And I appreciate you all listening, downloading, and, of course, subscribing to the Standick Grimaldi Podcast, wherever it is you do your podcasting. Also, make sure to check out The Athletic. We have got multiple stories up from this week at the league meetings, my interpretation of what Adam Peters had to say on a variety of topics, and then highlights from Josh Harris and Dan Quinn. They spoke separately, but both spoke on Tuesday, so I shared a bunch from that. So make sure to check that out. We do have a dollar a month deal going on right now, so you want to get a hold of that. All right, so a couple things today. I mentioned it was Drake May Day on the Pro Day circuit. He was, of course, doing this at the UNC campus. Washington's notables were there, just like they were for Daniels at LSU, meaning Adam Peters, head coach Dan Quinn, assistant GM Lance Newmark, and offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury. They were all in attendance. I did watch it on TV. You know, when you watch Drake May, it is like watching, you know, the old school prototype quarterback. He is 6'4". He is a big guy. He's got a big arm. He, you know, he looks the type of what teams valued in a quarterback for the majority of the league history, right? It's not, and I don't mean just he's big, like, say, the way Mark Rippon was big. He's got some mobility about him as well. He's got some confidence. He's got, you know, he looks the part. Now, that said, I have talked to some people around the league over the last, you know, I mean, I've been talking to people about these quarterbacks for a while, but I circled back with a bunch of sources over the last few days, you know, wanting to get a feel for where they're at with these prospects. We're all trying to get a feel for what Washington may do. And the Drake May story is really fascinating. He, of course, entered the season kind of neck and neck with Caleb Williams, or possibly neck and neck at least, depending on how their final seasons in college went, in terms of being the number one pick in this draft. It's not like he had a bad year by any stretch of the imagination. It just wasn't as good as his 2022 season. Sort of a similar story to Sam Howell in that he, for his Sam Howell's last year, in that he lost a lot of pieces around him, and that led to some poor some poor play at times, some dicey footwork. In speaking to various, as I said, various sources, one called him Justin Herbert light, quote, take everything Herbert does and make it less. They'll be compared, parentheses, because of prototype size, but there's no comparison. I like May, but when I see the amount of work it will take to have him reach his potential, will be fired first. That is quite the comment. On the other hand, there are people who really like him. Well, some people made the Justin Herbert comparison, but positively, equally. One general manager said that, you know, look, he's going to get picked apart. That's what's just going to happen. But that he's the one he would go with. He's the number, for him, for the GM, the number two quarterback in his class behind Caleb Williams. And the GM said he wouldn't be stunned if Drake May ends up being the guy. So, like with most of these players, it's a pretty split. I shouldn't say it's split. I don't know what percentage is. I'm only talking to who I'm talking to. I mean, I can't, you know, I'm not talking to 32 general managers or 32 head coaches or 32 main scouts. And honestly, most of that doesn't even really matter. I used this analogy today. I was on the radio on 980 with Craig Hoffman. And, you know, we've continued to talk about how the Commanders have been very quiet in terms of leaking any real information about what it is that they're looking at with regards to the draft. And I've done, as I said, I've talked to as many people as I can. I'm reading what I can, as you guys are, you know, all the things to try to get as much information I can. But this reminds me, again, if you're a Harry Potter person, I have read the books and watched the movies. You know, well, it's good stuff, or I thought it was. No, it is good stuff. Anyway, it's very creative. They play Quidditch. I'm sure even if you didn't read the books, you've heard of Quidditch. It's this sort of like flying lacrosse game on some level. And the game itself, it comes down to there's this golden snitch, this ball that flies all around, and you have to go get it. And if you get it, you win the game. Except that simultaneously, there's this separate game happening where it's more of this like bigger, harder ball that the other players are putting it between goalposts and past the goalie. What I can't figure out is that game doesn't really seem to matter that much because it's all about getting this little ball. Well, my point here is that the side game is like getting all this information we possibly can get. You do what you can. You want to hear the opinion of various sources. Maybe down the line it will matter more what they have to say. Should this pick go sideways or, you know, what have you. But ultimately, the golden snitch is what the Commanders actually do and think, what Adam Peters is going to want to do. So as much as we try to get, you know, get this information, and I'll have something about this next week, what I've heard, it all comes down to what the Commanders want. They've still been pretty quiet. So, you know, were they that impressive, Drake May? Is he the guy for them? Or are they one of the people who thinks, you know, it's a Justin Herbert light situation, if that? That is where we need to find out. Hopefully we will sooner than later. Hopefully it won't be on draft night, round one, pick two, and when we're sitting there going, what are they going to do? But, you know, that is what is notable. I saw Rick Spielman, of course, the former Vikings GM who was part of the Commanders coach and GM search. He tweeted out that he thought Drake May had a really good day, showed a good deep arm, you know, settled down after some misfires. Good to hear. Again, you can I'll share more next week about what I've heard from people around the league on some of these topics. But ultimately, what matters is what do the Commanders think, and we're not there quite yet. Nonetheless, you know, between McCarthy, Daniels, and May, you know, all seem to acquit themselves nicely at these pro days. So much of which, of course, doesn't even matter in terms of the throwing. It's about getting to know the person, seeing how they interact with their teammates and others, how they respond in that situation. It's not the same pressure as a game, but all these people are there. You know, there's tons of NFL folks, you know, lining the field, you know, steps away to watch them perform. And then, of course, there's the various, you know, chances to talk to them, go out to meals, what have you. So there's a lot to go into these pro days far beyond what's happening on the field. But nonetheless, you do want to see how they can make certain throws, even if it is against air. You know, by the way, I know like people have asked me, what do I think? And I always try to give this from the perspective of the team as best I can. I honestly swear I don't like being kind of lame and not offering much of an opinion, but it really is this close. I really do think this is a pretty confusing situation. Like I said, Drake May has got that prototype size and the big arm. So if you want that, then that's your guy. If you want that speed and mobility, but with a quarterback who can also make the deep throws down the field, then Jaden Daniels is going to be the prototype for that. But if you want the quarterback who I've heard scouts and others say is the best at processing what the defense is showing and doing it in quick fashion, can make the tough throws and just flat out, wins games, 27-1 over his 2 years at Michigan with a national title in J.J. McCarthy. I had Jim Harbaugh from the league meetings talking about McCarthy and Antonio Pierce, who had Daniels at Arizona State, talking about their quarterbacks. It is a very tough debate. I've been picking Jaden Daniels in my various mock drafts. I wish I could tell you if I had a really strong lean one way or the other. I just don't. I do want to get in more into McCarthy and see where what's going on there. But I think it really is just a matter of what are these guys looking at. If I had to guess, it is nothing more than that. I do kind of think that Daniels might be the guy because of his mobility, but long way to go before we get more thoughts on that. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the Commanders did, in fact, sign a player today. I am 100% going to butcher this name, so apologies. Hopefully I'm getting this right. Olamide Zacharias, wide receiver. He played last year for the Eagles after 4 years with the Falcons. He had a career-high 40 receptions for 533 yards in a career-high 13 starts for the Falcons in 2022. He last year only had 10 catches with the Eagles. We're talking about a 5'8" target. Has returned kicks some, but not a ton. Not enough for me to sit here and say that he would be potentially that type of player. Look, they haven't signed any receiver, right, since Curtis Samuel left. I still believe they're going to have to get some size. I should say a new receiver. They did re-sign, of course, Jamison Crowder. I don't know what this means yet for the roster when you consider, let's just say they go with six receivers. You have Terry McLaurin, you have Dotson, you have De'Ami Brown is on the team. You have now Zacchaeus. Again, I'm sure I'm butchering this. I apologize. We'll call him OZ. Plus Crowder. And then, you've got your Dax Mills and your Kazmir Allens. And, I would imagine they're going to add a receiver in the draft. I think they've got to get some size out there. So, somewhere on day two, adding a 6'2", 6'3" target would make a lot of sense. So I don't necessarily know what this signing means in terms of the depth chart, but it's another piece that they now have on the roster. And of course, he Brian Johnson, the associate head coach, who was the Eagles OC last year, has familiarity with OZ, that we're calling him that now. So that's a new piece there for this group. And I would imagine, there'll be more signings along these lines going forward. We know they still have plenty of depth needs and a couple of starter spots as well, potentially, but those will impact acquisitions will most likely come via the draft. All right, so lastly, as I mentioned, we're going to talk to Jory Epstein Epstein in a moment. A lot happened this week. We got to some of it the other day when we had JP Finley on with me from Orlando. We talked about some of the rules, but I wanted to get into it a little bit deeper with Jory. And as I said at the top, she's covered Dan Quinn quite a bit in his career, got to know him, and she was there for a good chunk of Dan Quinn's availability with us on Tuesday in Orlando. So she heard a lot of what we had to say, and I wanted to get her view of Dan Quinn for sure. So We got into a lot here. First time she's been on the podcast. I thought it was a really excellent interview. So let's get to that right now. Here's Jory Epstein talking about Dan Quinn, quarterback buzz, and new league rules here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right. As promised, joining me here, she is fresh off her time at the owner's meeting as well. Jory Epstein, senior NFL reporter for Yahoo Sports. Jory, thanks for doing this. It's always an eventful few days at the owner's meeting. And I'm not just saying this because you're here. There are some people, I don't know if you ever feel this way, where you walk around, it's a pretty expansive space that they're in. They're in these like luxury hotels, right? And there's two hotels connected. And there's some people who are like, I swear, everywhere I turn, there they are. And you're one of those people. I don't know how many people you talk to while you're there, but you seem to be everywhere. You were also at Dan Quinn's chat the other day. Am I right? Did you get like, how many steps are you putting in a day for these things?
Oh, that's a good question. It's definitely a lot, especially with just the way the hallways were set up this time. But I'm also like, I don't go to my room or I don't go to my hotel. Like, I pretty much just camp out in lobbies and hallways at events like this because I'm not running into sources in my room, and I might run into them in the lobby and hallways. So like, that's where I work.
It's totally smart move. I sometimes go into the media workroom that they have for us, 'cause I have to at some point like really focus. But then you're right. Like, if you do that, you know, the GM of the team I cover, he's not going to go in there. So if I want to go find these people, you got to go where they are. Do you have a preference? You were at the Senior Bowl, right?
Yes.
So Senior Bowl combine owners meeting, in terms of like what it is, what you need to accomplish, do you have a ranking?
Ooh, that's a good question. I will say there seems to be just like a degree of relaxation among coaches, execs, and everyone at the owners meetings that I really appreciate. Combine, you get the most number of people, which is great. And then Senior Bowl, it's all right. It's not as good as it used to be, but it can be helpful too. So they all kind of provide something a little different. But I also love, like, if I meet someone at one and then I can see them 2 weeks later at the combine and then 3 weeks later at the owners meetings, then you start to have like increasing, not only making new sort, like building new sources, but also maintaining them. So grateful for the opportunities to be there for sure.
You're totally right though, because we're all in this cycle, because I went to all three this year also, and you're in this cycle where you're seeing the same people over and over again. And yes, if it's somebody with a team that you're so with the league or whoever that you want to get to know, you see them one time, hey, nice to meet you. The second time, hey, how's everything going? And then the third time, you're like old friends. At least that.
How's your kids' baseball? How's the season been going since the last time I saw you?
Right, exactly. It's all important, and it's good. I mean, we got it. You know, it's hard when it's hard to be around the space of these people, including in this case, the owners were never in the space. Although I shouldn't say that, because you have typically covered Jerry Jones in Dallas, which means you talk to the owner of that team all the time. And of course, you were also around them with Dan Quinn as the defensive coordinator. What's that experience like covering the Cowboys, the number one draw in the league? And obviously with Jerry there, what's that like?
Yeah, I spent the first 7 years of my career in Dallas, now been in New York about a year. And I mean, everything that happens with the Cowboys is news. And you also realize like the Joneses love talking. Like, I remember there's one time where Jerry had a group session. I missed it. And I was like, I'm so sorry, I missed it earlier. Or I was getting all ready to tell him when I ran into him. This was at one of the events of the off season. And I was getting all ready to be like, I'm sorry, I missed it. Do you have time for just a question or two? And before I could even say that, he's like, oh, good to see you. Can I help you with anything? And I'm like, yeah, you sure can. And then gives me like 20 minutes one-on-one. And that was not a one-time thing. I mean, this past week at owners meetings, the first day, Jerry talked 43 minutes on the record and 20 minutes off of it. I mean, like, guy just loves the spotlight, loves sharing his opinions. So there's always a little bit of a circus. You realize there's just so much intrigue for all of the characters outside of the building. So you report what happens on the field, but you report a whole lot that doesn't happen on the field. Jerry talks on the radio twice a week during the season, all the good things. And then DQ, Dan was awesome. I was there, let's say, his first 2 years, and then saw him a bit in his third year in Dallas as well. And I always said I left every Dan Quinn press conference smarter than I got there and more informed than I got there. And I felt the same way when you and I were both at his breakfast press conference this week, because there are some coaches, and I understand why they do it, it's just annoying, who are very vanilla in press conferences, and they're just not giving you a whole lot. They're not saying anything. They're using the same cliches. You could pretty much answer the questions for them and get it right verbatim. And that's not Dan. I'm not saying he's giving away state secrets. And he made some jokes with all of you Washington reporters this week of like, oh yeah, like, no, I'm not going to tell you the name of that guy we had dinner with. But he is willing to teach something. He is willing to answer a question in depth and explain philosophy. And even though I'm not brand new to the industry anymore, I know I have a whole lot more to learn. And so I always love how Dan teaches.
It is. I've told this to coaches before when I've covered different sports. They'll criticize you for what they say will be a misinterpretation of something that happened or how you're looking at it. And then I'll say, cool, could you explain that to me then so I don't screw it up in your view the next time? And they say, no. I'm like, well
right.
then be quiet. Like, if you're not going to tell me, I got to figure it out on my own. And I don't, So, yes, I'm intrigued to see where this where the Dan situation goes for us. Just starting to learn him. I can totally get why everybody says he is this great guy and why players gravitate towards him and why he's going to be the guy that helps, build this camaraderie and the culture and all of that. How did you see that manifest itself over the time there at Dallas? Cause obviously they had a really good defense. I know the playoff results were disappointing, but the defense was obviously pretty good. How did you kind of see him really help build that camaraderie and that chemistry within that team?
Yeah, I think what stands out to me is let's go back to when Micah Parsons was drafted in the first round 2021, and it was still a little COVID-y. And I remember us being at this press conference. There's probably 10 reporters left with Jerry Jones after the draft. We still had to be masked, I believe, at that point. And this was a time where Jerry kept telling us pressure, pressure, pressure. Like, that's the vision for Micah. And I'm like, excuse me, like, this is a linebacker. He wasn't an outside linebacker or anything at this point. Like, he really was not a pass rusher at Penn State. And then Jerry said it. And again, if you've been around Jerry enough, you'll know he understands what's going on, but he's optimistic to the point where it's a blind spot. And so he'll tell you the best case scenario rather than the most likely case scenario. But to Dan's credit and to the staff that Dan had under him, and I know you guys have some of those people in DC now, and Joe Witt Jr. is your defensive coordinator, among others. Dan had this vision of like, look, I want a chess piece. I don't want him to only be a pass rusher or only be a linebacker. I want him to be a chess piece that offensive coordinators always have to say, I don't know where Micah is going to be, and I have to make my play calls accordingly, accounting for that. And the quarterback to always be a little bit on edge because he doesn't know where Micah is coming from. And Mike can chase someone line, like from sideline to sideline, and he can also pursue the quarterback pretty effectively. And his pass rush moves have grown over time because, again, that wasn't something that was part of his game in college. And so I think you have that in terms of, if you haven't heard him say it yet, you will. Dan Quinn loves the idea of superpowers. Every player has a superpower, and it's his job to go find the superpower and exploit it within his scheme and the way he's using his personnel. And so I think, one, just the idea of saying it that way, I know he's not the only one in the league to use the term superpower, but it kind of instills this belief in guys of like, don't focus on like your shortcomings. Let's go accentuate your strengths. And then off the field, I mean, he's kind of like this like fun uncle where he's kind of like in between where you don't want to disappoint him. I think Mike has told us that before, where it was like, it's not that he's going to get mad at you, but he'll get disappointed. And like, that's even worse. And then he's wearing his Jordans. He's got his backward baseball cap. You'll see him during training camp. He will be physically working with the pass rushers and getting up on them. And like, it's not just a, hey, I'm going to talk. Like, he is going to be having the pads, like holding them up, or at least he did. I guess he might not have time as head coach, but he is willing to do that, I should say. And then also on the other side of the ball, I mean, I know he and Dak had a lot of conversations, offense to defense, which I think will be interesting because you guys have a rookie quarterback coming in, it seems, of how is he going to interact there? How is he going to say, hey, as a defensive mind, here's what bothers me and here's what you should do, because it's going to drive a defense crazy. So I think he just, he has this just sort of like wisdom that he's gained over the years that I think will be really useful in DC.
He went to Salisbury University, which is a couple hours outside the city here and near the Ocean City, Maryland, and where the fun stuff happens. Everybody I know who's ever gone to Salisbury didn't go there for the education. They went for the enjoy life, I guess you could say. So I'm not saying he didn't get a good education, but like, you're definitely going there with a certain mentality of life is interesting and let me see how I fit in here to a degree. And the backwards hat, some of the sayings definitely fit in with that. And the superpower thing, he's mentioned that about Adam Peters now multiple times in terms of you know, getting ready for the draft. And Adams, during free agency, they signed, you know, 20 something players. And he said Adams' superpower is figuring out what, when I say, hey, we need this, and then figuring out how do we go out and get that person. Yeah. I think maybe perhaps like Frankie Louvu, the linebacker they got from Carolina, is the Micah Parsons. Not saying he's going to be that level, but in terms of the style, we need that guy. They went and got Frankie Louvu to sort of fit in to that spot. I've explained this before, but when they do these breakfasts for the coaches, like all the NFC coaches are in this one room. They're all at these circular tables. The beat writers are typically camped out, and then the people like yourself. And when it was the AFC day, I was like this, you know, you just sort of bounce around. You're covering the whole league. There's tons of stories to get at, but you did come over to Dan Quinn and spend ample time. Was it just because you knew Dan, or was there, and I don't want to get, you know, to tell
no,
us
no,
what
no,
you're
it's
working
a great
on,
question.
But I'm wondering, yeah, why did you pick him?
Yeah, I think I would say threefold. One, I knew him, but I'll get into why that matters with number three. Two, Commanders are very interesting right now, particularly with how early you're drafting. And three, I know that if I ask Dan a question, I'll get an answer I can use. And I appreciate that. So if I'm doing something on quarterback evaluation, which I am, there are certain coaches, if I ask, they're just going to give me this cliche answer that I can't use. And Dan is actually going to think through it and apply it. He's going to do it in a way that doesn't hurt his team, but he is going to answer it. And so I want to sort of understand. I was interested. How does Cowboys defensive coordinator Dan Quinn compare to Washington Commanders head coach Dan Quinn? But I also just knew, like, I will learn something if I go here.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense. I mean, I definitely stood at a couple tables on the AFC side for too long. And the response, I was like, oh boy, okay, well, I didn't choose wisely on this one, but some were good. And I guess just the sort of last thing on Dan Quinn, obviously there was a lot of question of, it seemed like he was clearly one of the main candidates to get a job this cycle. But there's also this thing, people want the hot new commodity, i.e. like a Ben Johnson, which was a whole other story here. And instead it lands on the quote unquote retread. I'm air quoting that in Dan Quinn. And yeah, not everybody loves that. As you, again, were covering him and observing him, did you think that he did make sense to get that second chance? And then I guess, if so, why?
Yeah, I think in terms of just who you want leading your men, I would put all my cards on Dan Quinn. I think that he will build a culture that you want. I think in terms of here's what I would say. Let's start this over. So the thing about Dan Quinn is he's a leader of men. He's a really smart defensive mind. He has a vision for what he wants for the team. He's done it before, and he's going to build the culture you want. I think building the culture you want is extremely important in Washington right now.
Yes.
You got the ownership out of there. You still kind of had Ron Rivera in this lame duck year. You need a quarterback. Like, who's going to teach that quarterback how to be a professional and set the tone there and kind of work in tandem with the quarterback to create this culture in the team? I think a Dan Quinn is great. The downside to a Dan Quinn is that the reason that teams are hiring offensive coaches is less because it's an offense. It's not just, oh, we want the guy who's really smart scheme. It's also, if you do not have an offensive head coach and you do well, you are probably going to lose your offensive coordinator, which can be really challenging for a quarterback. So could Cliff Kingsbury crush it this year? And that means you lose him. And then you have Drake May, Jaden Daniels, JJ McCarthy, whoever you have in that building at Washington, needing to adjust to potentially a new system, a new language, and a new coach. Yes, that's where I think the drawback is. But I do think that there's a lot that Dan needs. There's a lot that Washington needs right now that Dan is going to be able to provide. And to have a hot new name who doesn't have the experience, especially if they didn't bring in someone to compliment them. Like, the example I would give is when Sean McVay brought Wade Phillips in as the defensive coordinator. So you had an older, wiser, more experienced coach to compliment how young he was. I think if you don't have that in the building in Washington this year, it's going to be really difficult to succeed even in 2 or 3 years, which might be more what we're looking at.
Right, for sure. And you're totally, that was the big conversation here because people are obsessed with Ben Johnson. You may have heard about that.
A time or two.
Yeah. And so when it didn't happen, that was the big outcry. Great. Now, even if something works, they're going to have to keep changing coordinators. And I'm like, have you been here for the last 20 something years? If somebody thinks this was a good enough scenario to steal the OC, take it as a win, because there hasn't been a lot of winning around here in any capacity. But long-term, sure, that could be a potential issue. You know, John Harbaugh seems to change OCs every couple of years. They work it out, et cetera. So, you know, it can be done, but it's a little more little more challenging. You mentioned the quarterbacks that you're focusing on that. And we were joking before we started about whether pro days or, you know, how much they really matter. Drake May is going to have his pro day in a little bit. Michael Penix is having his, I think, right now. Jaden Daniels was yesterday. The obsession with pro days, or what's your view of that? And just for this class in general, how important, I guess, maybe I'll even ask this: who do you think these pro days even matter the most for? Do you think of these guys, and do they really matter at all? I guess.
Yeah, I think the thing is, when I'm watching the throws, and I have now watched Caleb Williams' pro day yesterday, I watched Jaden Daniels, and today, for better and for worse, I will watch Drake May. Not about Drake, but just, why am I spending this much time watching pro days? But when I'm watching, and I've talked to scouts about this as well, I'm usually not watching like, hey, did he miss it or did he make the throw? Or like, oh, did the receiver catch it? Obviously, that's a little bit relevant, but it's more one, okay, yesterday, Jaden Daniels had a couple deep throws that weren't caught. Well, how did he respond afterwards? How did he talk to his receivers afterwards? What was the demeanor between those guys? Okay, if you're who is it, Chicago, taking Caleb and his teammates to dinner around their pro day, well, then you get to see him interact with his teammates. And so I think that most of this is just to confirm or deny what you believe, or to confirm what you believe. Like, if you thought Jaden Daniels was a great thrower before yesterday and you thought he had mobility, you probably still do. If you thought he was lean and you wondered about his durability before yesterday, you probably still do. So I don't think you're totally changing what you think of them, but I do think that the more data points, the better. And that's sort of what these teams are looking for. Now, I'll also say, I don't think it's completely random that with JJ McCarthy being all the buzz at owners meetings, said that happened right after his pro day and right before the other two guys' pro days. Like, I think that there is a little bit of a recency bias there, but I think to suggest that any of these teams know what they're doing now, except for maybe the Chicago Bears, would be a little bit crazy because there's so many data points they haven't yet gathered.
That was a thing that Dan Quinn was saying to us sort of on and off the record, like, look, we're not there yet. He's like, look, I've been busy with free agency, assembling a coaching staff. I still need to do a lot of homework myself on these guys. And even if Adam Peters has the final say, I think the head coach needs to weigh in on what's going on. And he's got to, you know, whereas scouts have been on the road, Dan Quinn hasn't met these guys. You know, I assume this will probably be the first time he's met. Well, I guess probably the combine, you know, they met these guys, but you know, this cycle is the first time they're meeting these human beings and they want to know as much about them. Yes. It's driving me crazy how many people are trying to project what Washington is doing based on the assumptions. And I'm like, good luck. I don't know. It only drives me crazy when the people on Twitter tell me that they know what's going to happen. I'm like, okay, awesome.
Yeah, I had my Yahoo podcast earlier today, and the way I put it is I said two things. I said, one, I don't think the Commanders will end up taking JJ McCarthy. And two, I don't think the Commanders have definitively decided. Oh, we have balloons on the screen. I don't think the Commanders have definitively decided whether they will be taking JJ McCarthy, because why would they? It's one thing if you're sure about Caleb Williams and you feel great and you know you're the first guy on the board. If you're not, you should not have a, you can have a leaning, but you should keep trying to confirm or deny that leaning.
100%. As you're talking to people, and you know, I said you're talking to all kinds of people around the league. Do you get, like, the one thing I wonder is there is this constant obsession. We talk about need versus best player available, and not to suggest that, like, if the best player available, say, is Marvin Harrison Jr., that Washington or the Patriots should take him necessarily. But the quarterbacks often get pushed up in drafts, as we know, because it's, people are desperate to get them. And I do wonder, on some degree, is any of that happening here? The JJ McCarthy noise is getting louder. Just even the idea of Jaden Daniels and Drake May, as good as they may have been in college, I don't know. And some people are telling me they're just not fans. Do you get any sense that, like, these guys are just getting pushed up way too much, or that they really, you know, at least one or two of them beyond Caleb legitimately are being viewed as guys that you know, can build around?
My dad and I were talking the other night when I was at owners meetings, and I told him that pre-draft season is like the game Two Truths and a Lie, except it's two truths and 70 lies. And I just think we should be very cautious about what we believe now. So do I think that quarterbacks get pushed up beyond their talent potential relative to other guys at their positions? 100%, because there's such a supply-demand issue. You need it to work so well. It's so hard to find them. It's a more inexact science, in my opinion, because of the degree that the processing and decision-making at the position factors in, and that's one of the hardest things to evaluate as opposed to the athleticism and the physical traits. But I also think that we're just not being told the truth on a lot of things. And then, of course, my colleague Charles Robinson did some good reporting on this today, where it's like, well, who's one of the top guys publicly pushing the McCarthy hype train? Jim Harbaugh. Well, first of all, he's biased. He coached him at Michigan. Second of all, it's in Jim Harbaugh, the Los Angeles Chargers head coach's best interest for everyone above him to pick quarterbacks. So I think there's a lot of reasons that we need to view what's being said through the lens of the agenda these voices have.
Somebody suggested to me, if Jim Harbaugh thinks J.J. McCarthy's all that, why doesn't he trade Justin Herbert and just draft McCarthy? I don't know. Right? I'm assuming he wasn't asked that question, but, you know, next time. We can do that. And just to tie up here with regards to the league meetings, it was weird. I've been saying, for me, people asked how did it go? And I was like, well, for the first time I ever attended one of these, the Commanders were not center stage. So it was fun to just sort of appreciate what it was. But it also didn't feel like there was anything that was like center stage. There was no Lamar Jackson controversy or, you know, like we had last year, the Aaron Rodgers, you know, that they, he's always in the news for something, but that wasn't, he wasn't a big deal. Like, there was nothing
he's
specific.
No longer a real VP candidate.
Right. You know, so there were a couple things, the, you know, the kickoff rule change and the hip drop tackle and some other things. What did you make of the fact that, I guess, if you agree with that, that this wasn't a headliner type of owners meeting, and that there were more of these secondary stories that were, you know, sort of front and center?
I mean, I did feel like the rule changes were coming fast and furious in a way that they didn't come before. Both like, okay, we're moving the trade deadline. We're playing on Christmas Wednesdays. I thought that the hip drop tackle got passed earlier than I was expecting. Obviously, the kickoff change was a pretty significant one relative to like how much it's going to change the game. So I think there was all of that, but you're right. There wasn't like one specific controversy, which what's amazing is the NFL is just as relevant even without that one specific controversy. And I think that was kind of my takeaway.
Yeah, no.
And also on the Washington note that you mentioned, I was talking to someone who works for the organization and I'm like, I'm so happy for you that I'm getting to talk to you about football because I know how much non-football brain space y'all have taken up over the last couple of years.
Oh, without a doubt. I was, you know, the first week of free agency was nuts with all the people they were signing, and I couldn't have been happier in the sense that at least it was not the Congressional Oversight Committee. I'll take updating the depth chart as opposed to having to consult with lawyers about what I'm being told here. So to that end, so they did make some rule changes. I did like some of the practical ones. The practice squad quarterback, there's no more limit on how many times that player can be called up and down. It's kind of nuts to me. You just don't have a built-in third quarterback on everybody's roster since it's so important, but so on. There's more plays that can be involved for replay, which I know nobody loves too many things getting put in a replay, but at least you have some more opportunities to, you know, consult if something goes awry. And then, you know, we mentioned the hip drop and the kickoff. Any of those, what for you, I guess, was the most interesting change and why?
Well, yeah, what's interesting to me, first of all, is that they didn't have to change any rules to play Wednesday Christmas games. Like, you kind of almost feel like they should have to. In terms of most interesting, I mean, I think the most controversial is going to end up being the hip drop tackle, or as they're now calling it, the swivel hip drop tackle, because they're saying what most people think of as a hip drop tackle is actually still allowed. It's just the specific type where the defender comes, he grabs a player, he unweights himself, so the defender is unweighting himself, and then falls on lower leg, foot, all those things below the knee. I think that it's going to be like really hard to legislate. And I think that it's also like, again, it's great to say, well, we showed everybody video. It's also pretty unrealistic to think that the defenders can go full speed, right, full force, and then be like, wait, let me make sure I stay on the ground. So I don't know. I think that one, if I were the NFL, I understand why they're doing the rule. I thought that once they started telling us there's a 20 to 25 times injury rate relative to other tackles based off a study of 20,000 tackles, it was pretty clear they were going to get that out of the game, because they don't tell us about here's this super dangerous thing if they're not getting it out. But I think if I were them in the first year, I would do more like warnings and like, hey, this is how you need to coach it differently, rather than just fining and penalizing everybody.
Right. And I know Dan Quinn, I don't remember if it was you that asked him or someone else, but he was asked about this. And he basically said, as I recall, that it's like when a few years ago, like helmet to helmet hits were being, you know, too prominent, and they needed to legislate that out, and people are complaining. But over time, it's less and less, and now we don't really talk about that as much. And he's viewing it, I think, like that like, okay, whatever. I don't know if he even stated definitively that he, what he thinks of it, but just that, hey, they're trying to legislate it out. So while right this minute, it seems, intense, over time it won't be as big of a deal.
Yeah, I think over time it won't be. And I do agree with him. And that's why I understand why this makes sense. But I think similarly in those times, just not being super strict on it is a good idea.
And then just lastly on the kickoff, do you think this is going to, like, obviously the kickoff was dying. This was so interesting that this rule that they've been trying to, these plays that they're trying to make fewer injuries, that it's led to the ball. The kickers are now just kicking the ball out of the end zone, right? Zero kick returns in the Super Bowl. It's either like you have to figure out a way to make this play viable or just almost get rid of it. So they came up with this hybrid situation where they'll, you know, the people running down the field and the blockers are kind of stationary further down the field. You have to kick the ball within this 20-yard zone between the goal line and the 20, and the ball moves out. You know, if it's a touchback or whatever, it moves out to a certain distance. It's a lot of very odd things. Do you like it though? Like, do you think as best you can tell that you think it's going to be something that's going to be fun? The kickoff is always such a highlight, but you know, there is a lot of risk to it.
Yeah. I think when you look at this, the NFL had an opportunity to make the game safer, to increase the amount of offense and entertainment, and to likely increase scoring, because as the competition committee guys were telling us, if you increase field position, which they believe this will, by 3 to 5 yards, then you increase scoring in games. And basically, like, Cowboys special teams coach John Fossil is one of the two special teams coordinators really pushing this. And he was explaining to me, he's like, this actually isn't going to be that different for the players. It's basically just taking what we do in practice and putting it into the game. Because if you think about the kickoff and you think about the kick coming, two teams running at each other, and then the play starting, we're essentially just taking out the running and starting where you would be at the end of that, which is what they do in practice, because you don't want to risk injuring your own teammates. And so if force equals mass times acceleration, and we take out some of the acceleration, we reduce the force, we still have in theory the same strategy, but we decrease the likelihood of injury. So I think it'll be really interesting. And I think that this is not a complete change of the, I mean, it is a big change, but it's almost a change that is very much in the spirit of what the kickoff was doing. And in some ways is more of a football move and a football play than we had before.
And I remember they had a couple different special teams coaches help explain it. And one of them said that now when you actually have joint practices, you'll be able to do that head to head. Cause I, you know, when going to training camp, I'm always like, how can't even really practice this that much because a kickoff, because of what we're saying, that the collisions, you can't do it in any real way. So yeah, we'll see. Maybe that'll help there.
And it's worth noting that now, yeah, if you kick it out of bounds, it's coming back to the 30, well, then you don't want to kick it through the end zone. Also, if you kick it in the, what they're calling the landing zone, the 0 to 20, the other team has to return it. So we're going to see a lot more returns, which should be exciting.
And that should also, I would imagine, change how we view 53 player rosters in terms of, you know, either more of an emphasis on these returners or finding players who can do, you know, a combination of things, the defensive back or a wide receiver who can do that. And maybe that player makes the team over somebody who's more of just a pure, they were just maybe dismissing it more before because the kick wasn't becoming that big of a deal. Jory, that was awesome. Thank you so much for the time at Jory Epstein on Twitter. I'm also going to mention you are, I can't comprehend writing a book. You did The Upstander, How Surviving the Holocaust Sparked Max Globin's Mission to Dismantle Hate. I appreciate the fact that you did that and that you are speaking up on such topics at this time in this country. Anything else that we need to know about with your football work that we should be reading or being on the lookout for?
No, thank you so much. I really appreciate you mentioning that on the book. It's definitely a project that means a lot to me. I will be writing about the Commanders later and what they could do based off Dan Quinn's comments and some of the quarterbacks. So you can find that on the Yahoo website I'll be tweeting it at Jory Epstein. So great to see you this week in Orlando, Ben, and great to join you for this conversation.
Yeah, thanks so much. And, find other ways to get your steps in. You can't just like follow sources around now. You gotta get in some other way. Thanks so much.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Great stuff from Jory. You can definitely keep an eye on her for her views of and reporting on various league topics. And sounds like we may be seeing her at some point down in Ashburn this offseason. By the way, I didn't mention this earlier, but Today was also the University of Washington's pro day, which means Michael Penix Jr., one of the other quarterbacks considered to be a potential first-round pick, was in action. Since it was simultaneous, essentially, to the North Carolina pro day, Washington obviously had their heavy hitters with watching Drake May. They did have a scout, Paul Skansky, in Washington, I was told, for that. The Huskies, I don't know if Penix is, you know, unless the Commanders trade out of two and look to get a quarterback somewhere else in the first round, I don't think Penix is an option. But they do have several other prospects, including offensive tackle Roger Rosengarten and edge rusher Braylon Trice. Both are typically projected into the second round. Needless to say, those are positions of need for the Commanders and could very well end up in a local beat writer's mock draft in the days ahead. There's more to come. I've got, you know, another interview in the can that I want to get to, but we'll save that for next week. I've got some other interviews lined up. I'm excited to have you guys hear from people for you guys to hear from as we talk about these quarterbacks, talk more about these prospects, and of course, just the Washington Commanders in general. That is it for now, though. Until next time. Oh, of course, go listen to part one if you haven't already. There's no order. You can listen to them out of order as needed, but make sure you listen to them both for sure. But that is it for now. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time. See ya.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.